A few years ago, the New York Times published a front-page story. The headline was, "Portraits of Religion in the United States Holds Dozens of Surprises." So I was curious about the surprises. I read on. The first three sentences of the article listed what the religion writer for the Times considered surprises. He wrote, "The state with the highest proportion of atheists is Oregon. Most Americans of Irish ancestry are Protestant. Unitarians are more likely to be divorced than are members of other religious groups." This last sentence caught my attention. Later in the article, it said, "The likelihood of being divorced is generally uniform across all religious groups. Roman Catholics, with a 7.5% currently divorced, are only slightly lower than other mainstream Protestants and Jews, with 8.7% divorced. The Greek Orthodox have the lowest level of divorce at 4.4%, and the Unitarians the highest at 18%. Well, why do we have more divorced people in our churches? I do not think it is because we encourage divorce. Especially when children are involved, I am not a supporter of divorce as a quick solution to marital conflict. I believe that we who are parents have a duty to try to stay together. We share responsibility for the children we have brought into the world. At their best, Unitarian Universalist congregations serve as a support system to encourage parents to stay together and to work out their differences. Still, I would never suggest that every couple should stay in a relationship. I would not even suggest that every couple with young children should stay married. Although Unitarian Universalist churches serve as a support system for families, we also affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Unlike some religious communities, we do not stigmatize persons who have gone through a divorce. This affirmation of the worth and dignity of each person may explain why, compared with other churches, twice as many divorced persons attend our congregations. I have a Unitarian Universalist friend who lives in another state. Years ago, I was privileged to attend his wedding, and about 10 years later, his wife left him. I asked my friend, if he were to come to church to hear a sermon about divorce, what would be most helpful? And he said, "I would find it most helpful to hear you talk about forgiving my ex-wife. I can get on with my life. I can move forward only as far as I can forgive her for leaving me. To the degree that I cannot forgive, I remain stuck." Well, this time of year includes religious rituals in which Jews ask for forgiveness. Following the afternoon service of Rosh Hashanah, Orthodox Jews visit a body of water and recite biblical verses expressing repentance and forgiveness of sins. One verse includes the words from Micah, "You will throw all your sins into the depths of the sea." The ritual once called for Jews to feed breadcrumbs to fish to symbolize the wiping out of humanity's past sins. Today, Jews sometimes reflect this custom by turning their pockets inside out and brushing the small particles in their pockets, the breadcrumbs, into the water. Forgiveness is also popular among Christians. In the late 1940s, the Unitarian Universalist theologian James Luther Adams was teaching ministerial students at Meadville Lombard Theological School in Chicago. He made the students he was teaching an offer. Any student who would listen to the most popular religious broadcast of the day, the Lutheran Hour, and find a sermon that did not solve human problems with God's forgiveness would win $10. That was a good deal of money, the equivalent of more than $100 today. No one ever collected. The phrase God's forgiveness was used every Sunday. As you can see, forgiveness is a common word in traditional Christian sermons. For many people, because it is used so much, it has lost its power and meaning. My colleague, the Reverend Tony Larson, has been minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church in Racine, Wisconsin, since 1975. Before Tony was ordained as a Unitarian Universalist minister, he studied to be a Catholic priest for 10 years. About the word forgiveness, he said, "All my life I have been taught that you should always forgive people. When I was in a fight or an argument, my parents or my teachers always told me to shake hands and make up. Never hold a grudge. So I always tried to do it. Whenever I felt wronged and I became angry, I would try to push those angry feelings away and say to myself, I hold no grudge. But you know," Tony continues, "but you know, saying you hold no grudge doesn't mean it's true. You can say anything you want to yourself or to other people, but saying it doesn't make it so. I think we do a disservice to adults," Tony said, "when we tell them they should forgive people who have abused them. The minister who tells a battered woman that she should forgive her husband and take him back, no matter how much he beats her, because marriage is forever and good Christians always forgive, that minister is wrong." The Unitarian Universalist layperson made the same point. "Preaching that people ought to forgive may do more harm than good," he said. "For many people, especially victims of abuse, saying that they should forgive trivializes the real hurts, the suffering, and makes personal growth more difficult." And another person said, "Teaching forgiveness is hogwash. You will turn everyone into benign, benevolent zombies. They will all be too blissed out to function in the real world, where you need a good, strong suit of armor to make sure you do not get eaten alive." Well, when a word is overused, as the word forgiveness has been overused, it sometimes helps to use a different word. So I want us to take a step back away from the word forgiveness. I want to suggest for a moment that we do not worry about that word forgiveness. Instead, I want to talk about understanding. Understanding. I suggest that the better we understand our ex-partners, the better we can heal the pain inside us. The better we can wrap up our unfinished business and put it behind us. It helps us to try to understand our ex-partners and our relationships with them, not as a favor to them, but so we can let go of the past and get on with our lives. Well, how do we understand our ex-partner? We can look on it as a research project. We can investigate the history and the patterns in both families. We can explore our memories of the relationship to try to understand what has happened. We can read books about human behavior that might help us gain insight into our ex-partner. We can talk to friends and relatives who know us both, or talk to people in the church who know us both, asking, what were your impressions of our relationship? What do you think was going on? If drugs or alcohol were a problem in the relationship, we can learn from attending a group like Alcoholics Anonymous or Al-Anon. We can weigh and shift through all the information that we gather, trying to make sense of it. In my own life, I've discovered that I can understand others only as far as I can understand myself. If I work hard at it, the attempt to understand an ex-partner becomes an attempt to understand the mixed-up thoughts and feelings inside me. I breathe deeply and let my feelings of anger and fear come to the surface. I discuss those feelings with people I trust. I explore where those feelings come from in my own history. I look again at my relationship with my parents, my brothers, my sister, my friends, my teachers. The better I can understand myself, understand the sources of my feelings and my motivations, the better I can understand others. As we learn about what is going on inside us, we are better able to use our imagination to put ourselves inside our ex-partner and try to experience the world the way she or he experiences it. With this understanding, we are less likely to repeat the same patterns in a new relationship. So if we work on self-understanding, and if this leads to a better understanding of our ex-partner, perhaps somewhere down the line, we can write a letter or say face-to-face, or at least say in our own heads, I know you did the best you could. If you could have done better, you would have. This statement, I know you did the best you could, is a healthy form of forgiveness. In calling this forgiveness, I am defining forgiveness differently than people often define it. To explain how I'm using the word, it helps to say what forgiveness is not. Forgiveness is not forgetting. Past events and the pain of those events have a great deal to teach us so that we do not repeat the same pattern in our next relationship. It's important not to forget. Forgiveness is not approving. By trying to understand our ex-partner, we are not saying that their actions were acceptable. True understanding cannot occur when we are in any way denying or minimizing or justifying or condoning actions that have harmed us or others. Forgiveness is not absolution. When we try to understand our ex-partner, we are not absolving them of responsibility for their actions. Forgiveness is not a form of self-sacrifice. In trying to understand our ex-partner and what happened in the relationship, we need not swallow our feelings and try to get in. We try to get in touch with our feelings. We try to learn from them rather than denying their power. So when I say forgiveness, I do not mean forgetting or approving or absolving or self-sacrifice. I mean understanding. Imagine saying to a man or woman with whom you once lived and loved and now have separated from, I know you did the best you could. If you could have done better, you would have. Being able to say this without the words sticking in our throat, that's forgiveness. Now, I know some of you are thinking, I've studied this ex-partner. I know, they didn't do the best they could. They could have done better. I've had these thoughts myself more than once. When someone hurts me, I go through a process of grief. I had expected that this time, this person would be different from what they turned out to be. I imagine that they would see the world much as I see the world. I expected that they would be reliable, reasonable, and trustworthy the way I am reliable, reasonable, and trustworthy. When I say they did not do the best they could, I'm really saying I refuse to let go of my expectations. Forgiveness is an act of understanding myself and others well enough that I can let go of my unrealistic expectations. And this is a goal worth working for. The goal of understanding our ex-partners so well that we can grieve the loss of our expectations. And after we have gotten in touch with our grief about those expectations, we might be able to say, I know you did the best you could. If you could have done better, you would have. Well, what do we gain when we reach this point? I think we can move into a new relationship with someone else, having learned from the past. We can risk love and intimacy again, perhaps with expectations that are more realistic. As a group, Unitarian Universalists are more likely to have experienced divorce than are members of other religious groups. In my experience, this is not because we Unitarian Universalists are more likely than other people to mess up our marriages. It's because we do a better job of treating divorced peoples with value and worth, with the respect that they deserve. I am a strong believer in marriage. I've been married myself since 1981. Nevertheless, if you have gone through a divorce, know that here we will treat you with the same respect with which we treat everyone else. We work hard to make this church a support system for marriages. Still, if your relationship ends in a separation, here we will not make you feel guilty. In this, we are unusual among religions in America. Our effort to respect the dignity of everyone, whatever their marital status, is something we can take pride in as a religious community. On the eve of Yom Kippur, traditional Jews ask and accept forgiveness from each other for past offenses. Obtaining forgiveness from others signifies God's forgiveness. During the Yom Kippur service, praying together, the congregation acknowledges God and asks forgiveness for sins that they have committed. Having given and received forgiveness, they can enter the new year free of the baggage of the past. In this same spirit, may each of us forgive. That is to say, may each of us let go of our unrealistic expectations of others and move forward with our lives, free from past feelings of anger and disappointment. Others have made mistakes and hurt us. However, each of us is trying to do the best we can. If we could do better, we would. Knowing this, may we forgive others, put the past behind us, and move on with our lives.